hardcore baseball talk, inside the ropes with wrestling talk, and where you should put your money with Over Under 98.5. Listen to the podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and on the Sports Hub app. You don't have to lift a finger to wake up to Toucher and Rich.
No way.
Just tell your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports Hub. Never argue with a crazy mama, mama, mama. Is that all you get for your money?
You should never argue with a la, 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 la. You gotta know by now. You should never argue with a crazy mama, mama, mama. You gotta know. La, 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 la. You gotta never argue with a crazy mama, 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 mama. You gotta know by now. You should never argue with a la, 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 la.
That all you get for your money.
Okay. Chase investor paper, like with Twitter again. Sick of arguing with white dudes on the internet. When I'm gassing my own black past, like how a wig could get, I like to slow it down with a marijuana cigarette, occasionally with powders in it. Yes, talking fresh, yeah, good hair. You can say I'm Malcolm
X. 98.5 The Sports Hub, we are Toucher and Rich. And Michael Hurley was in yesterday. I saw he is very upset at Pro Football Talk. Now, you have a relationship with Pro Football Talk. Do you not, Mr. Breer?
Yeah, I like Mike Florio. What's up?
All right. This is from Pro Football Talk. I believe this is a tweet. It says, given the way the Patriots have persuaded key players to take less money over the years, there is an argument to be made that they should have more than 10 Super Bowl trophies.
That'd be a lot.
Oh, yes, of course.
They have a huge advantage. I mean, their quarterback's making less than half what Aaron Rodgers is making.
Now, does that bother him now at this point? Because people are speculating all over the place.
I think forever that contract, like forever, like, the entire time he's been here, Tom Brady has facilitated so much because he's willing to be coached hard. He's willing to be treated like crap. They can MF him in the meeting room. Takes less money. He facilitates so many things for them, because if you're asking for more money, if you're acting like a jerk, if you're speaking up, if you're, you know, if you're not wanting to do something, like all they got to do is point to Brady and say, look at number 12, like that's the greatest player of all time and he's doing it, so you better do it too. Like any coach will tell you that's exactly what you're looking for, and he facilitates everything,
right?
So if he looks at it, if there's a problem between him and the team, if there's a problem between him and the coach, you know, of course he's going to look that differently. Like, and there has been clearly acrimony between the coach and the quarterback over the last year.
And now that's been substantiated. And I mean, you knew about it,
right?
But now with that book that's coming out, that guy had access to, we had him on Lieberman or something.
Leibovich.
He had access like to everybody.
Yeah.
And I mean, he comes away saying that exact same thing. And I mean, Tom Brady's father, who I love because he just is right. Like, I'm Tom's dad.
Well,
and I'm more important than him because I had him.
And well, think about this too. You got that year of history. You've got that year of like history now. Like that's the background. And who are you throwing to?
Yeah.
Like he punts the ball in practice. I mean, we've seen the frustration. We've seen the like it boiling over. And do I think like there's a little bit of, yeah, I think there's still uneasiness there. Like, I don't think it's perfect. And you just think about this in real life terms. Okay. Like if you're taking a little bit less money from the radio station and everything's like you're happy with your job and you like who you're working with and all that different stuff, there's a good chance you might not think about it. But if people start to grade on you and you don't like the way X, Y, or Z is working, you're underpaid, like then you might look at that completely differently.
Right.
And so I think that's got to be part of it. Like, and it's not like he's in a totally different situation than Aaron Rodgers is either. The age is obviously a difference.
Right.
But he's got 2 years, like going into this summer, he had 2 years left on his contract. Aaron Rodgers had 2 years left on his contract. And like, if you listen to people talk about Aaron Rodgers' contract, over the last 6 or 7 months, it was the Packers have to get this done. Nobody was saying that about Brady the same way. I mean, that would probably get frustrating.
What do you make of the people around Brady saying that he wouldn't mind if he was released so he could go somewhere else? And then the speculation from the author was it would be the Giants. He wouldn't mind playing in Los Angeles, that those things are appealing to him.
Well, he told us himself he told us himself at the end, just the way that documentary was edited. Like, forget what Seth reported in December. Forget what we've all talked about for the last 6 or 7 months. Just, like, look at what he's told us. He told us at the end of that documentary, the way that was edited, like, one of the last things we saw was his wife saying he doesn't feel appreciated and he's not having fun. Like, he had full editorial control over that.
Right.
That's not reporting. That's not sourced information. That's right there for you. And he had final cut on that, right? And then what's the next thing we see? The next thing we see is he's not showing up to anything that he doesn't have to show up to.
Right.
It's the first time you've ever seen him leverage his name against the team. Like, we haven't seen him leverage his name against the team in almost any way in nearly two decades. And now, if Tom Brady is part of the power of the program here, is Tom Brady care? Tom Brady could, like, had a way of acting like he's the 30th guy in the roster. And like I said, that enabled everything.
Right.
This is the first time we've seen him say, you know what? I'm Tom Brady. I don't need to do that.
Right. Because the top three paid players on NFL teams account for like over 25% of the salary cap or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, most NFL rosters, what you'll see is there's like a cliff and there'll be 8 or 9 guys who are really getting paid.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it will be like draft picks.
Right.
You know, like guys who are on their rookie contracts who aren't making anything. The Patriots are different. The Patriots
have a bunch of middle, like, guys. Right. They pay more for the.
And they turn over, and instead of turning over the middle of the roster, like most teams turn the middle of the roster, so you'll see a bunch of like low salary guys there. The Patriots actually, to some degree, turn the top of their roster, so they'll bring in guys who may have been high draft picks elsewhere, who are still on their rookie deals. Guys like Cooks last year,
right?
You know, they brought in like Kyle Van Noy, who I believe was a second round pick in Detroit. Like, they'll get guys, and these guys will become top of the roster players, and they'll churn them in or out, so they've never. They're much less frequently, for a contender, much less frequently paying top-of-the-market deals to their stars.
All right. Danny, hello, sir.
Hey, you know, I think it hit the nail on the head there. You know, I think it's one thing when the teams went in and the quarterback's happy, but you look at teams like Atlanta that are paying Matt Ryan this crazy amount of money, and they still find a way to be able to have big-name wide receivers. You know, it's one thing to take a pay cut and see your money going somewhere where it's being properly utilized. But when Brady's making 15, you know, 10, 15 million dollars, and he should, it's like, where's the rest of that money go? I think that the Patriots are the type of team where they could have an average defense, and if you give Brady an okay line, one or two great wide receivers, they're going to be way better than if you put your money in the defense and then, you know, you give Brady nothing. A lot of, you know, their defense has definitely helped them, but they've always been a team that the defense just has to do enough. And Brady will do the rest, but he can't do that if your number two wide receiver is Philip Dorsett. So, again, I don't think he has a problem taking a pay cut as long as the money that he's not getting is going somewhere that's going to help him. And I don't think that that's happening right now, and I think that that's a big part of the problem.
I think what you're saying is interesting because I remember in 2006, it was 12 years ago now, like Brady getting really upset about that. And some of it actually spilled out publicly. I think back then it was an interview with Mike Silver that he did when Mike Silver was at SI. And yes, I think in 2005 he took a deal that was okay, but it wasn't like what Peyton Manning was making. And then they let and it was sort of under the premise, like, we need to start paying some of these guys who've helped us win these Super Bowls. And then in the next offseason, they let David Givens walk, and then they hardline it with Deion Branch,
mm-hmm.
and then they wind up trading Deion Branch. And that year, Brady is throwing to Doug Gabriel and Rashay Caldwell and Jabbar Gaffney, and Troy Brown isn't what he was. And, like, it was, I think it was the first time Brady looked at it and said, like, wait a second, you said you were going to give this money to other, and I think it, like, almost registered in his head where he was like, they're not using my contract to help other people. They're taking my contract and hitting my teammates over the head with it.
Right.
And saying, well,
yeah,
he took
using
less.
That if they're saying, if Tom takes less, who are you?
Right. And I think he started to realize it at that point. Now, obviously, he's gotten past that, but like they've never used Brady's contract to go overpay someone else.
Right.
It's never worked that way.
Do you think he, because it doesn't even seem like he had, and it still doesn't seem like he has any say over personnel.
No. No.
But on a lot of teams, if you're a franchise quarterback, couldn't you at least strongly suggest someone and maybe you catch the ear of the general manager?
Peyton Manning would be the one where you'd say it seemed like maybe he had some influence. But even then, I don't think Bill Polian was listening. Like, I think he may have made suggestions to Bill Polian, but I don't think Polian was running his team in any way based on what Peyton Manning thought. Like, the other one I think of is Aaron Rodgers, and he's had huge issues with some of the things that they've done, and that they haven't been more aggressive in free agency, and that they've turned over his coaching, the offensive coaching staff, the guys who work with him. So, I mean, like, I almost feel like we've seen more outward frustration from a guy like Aaron Rodgers than we have from Brady, and I'm not sure I can think of a great example. I know this happens in other sports. Like, I don't really think it happens much in football.
Right.
It's just for one reason or another, it just does not happen in that sport, even with the quarterbacks who I'd argue are almost, I mean, like, quarterbacks are almost like golfers. Like, it's almost like a separate sport. Like, the way they're paid, the way they're developed, the way they grow up, the way they're recruited to college, the way they're drafted, like, it's all different than every other player. And so they're almost separate from everybody else. And yet I don't think that they even have much of a say in the way any of these teams run.
All right, 617-779-0985. There are no more CBS Sports Minutes, so we'll be back even sooner than usual.
98.5. Toucher and Rick.
.985, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB. He's the new Peter King. He's going to grow an afro and start drinking hoppy-ass microbrews.
And fancy coffee, right?
Yeah. The thing that bothered me about him is that he would always...
Everything?
No, I mean, his articles were so damn long. Is that he would go, like, I had a brew. And you're like, you had one beer? Get out of here, Peter. Come on. You're on the road. You're a writer. Let's get going. David, go ahead, sir.
Hey, Bert Breer, I appreciate you bringing up this topic this morning because I noticed over the last couple of years with the New England Patriots, right, the X factor has not been Bill Belichick. It has not been Tom Brady like, you know, we so often talk about. The X factor has been Bob Kraft because for years we've let go of good talent, you know, like Chandler Jones. I mean, Deion Branch before he came back when he went to Seattle, so on and so forth. And they always talked about it was being the Patriots' way. But last year, when they got rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, if I understood that situation correctly, Jimmy Garoppolo was not going to have a team-friendly contract like Tom Brady. So that's why they kept Tom Brady over Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the way I understood it. So it has never been about the Patriots' way. It's been about Bob Kraft trying to nickel and dime that team so much into, just being as low cost as possible. And they still did amazing things with what they had. That's all. I just want to listen, man. Thanks.
I think that's probably unfair. Like, I don't think that they've... I don't think they've been cheap because they don't want to spend on the football operation. I think that the way the football operation works is pretty high-end. I just think that the way that they've run the cap, the way that they've structured their contracts, like there's absolutely a piece of that where, you know, they've been very, very hard line with star players. And a lot of players come here knowing, like, this isn't a place where I'm going to go to get paid. And how many examples can you think of where they have a guy in the roster who's the number one guy, number one paid guy at his position?
Right.
I think Moss was right when they paid him, and that was coming off of like just a...
like a monumental year.
like a historic year.
Right.
Outside of that, like, you can't think of too many examples where they were paying a guy, and this is a team that's won 5 Super Bowls, where they had the top paid guy at his position.
All right. Speaking of which, there was a rework deal for Gronkowski yesterday. It's incentive laden, the $5 million incentives. $5 million for Tom Brady's. I don't know.
It's 4.3.
Okay, so 4.3, its incentives, is that satisfying to Gronkowski? Because one of them's playing all 16 games, which seems highly unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think that... I think there are two things at work here. First, they're... And I think for all skill players, like, all the big-time skill players in the NFL, like, Sammy Watkins' contract changed everything. Sammy Watkins gets $16 million a year in Kansas City, and... Like, there were guys who are... Forget the receivers. Obviously, has an effect on the receiver position. We saw, you know, we saw Odell Beckham get paid. We seen Mike Evans get paid. Like, it had an effect on receivers. We saw Brandon Cooks get paid. Like, it also had effect on other guys who aren't receivers, and that's tight ends and running backs. And, you know, Todd Gurley and Rob Gronkowski could very easily say, I'm better than that guy. Why is he getting paid more than me?
Right.
Now, there are different markets at different positions, and that's why. But they could still say, that's, like, we need to make this right. And Gurley winds up getting 2 years left on his deal. Again, another one of these guys, 2 years left on his deal. I mean, the Rams corrected the market. The Rams gave him almost $15 million a year.
Right.
They gave him what Adrian Peterson got 7 years ago before the market for running backs collapsed. And I think Gronk was the same thing. It was, like, I am a tight end, but you should be paying me like an offensive weapon, and I'm looking at what these other guys are making, and that's not right. Like, I shouldn't be making like a little over half of what Sammy Watkins is making, which is what he was scheduled to make. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it is like so much of this, and look, it's not being cheap, but it's like the Patriots have precedents that they don't want to break. And one of them is just giving a guy a flat-out raise out of nowhere. They almost never do that. I mean, I think maybe they did that for Richard Seymour way back in the day when he held out, but Richard Seymour had to go to the mat to get it.
Right.
Right. And so, like, I think that the piece of this that you have to pay attention to, but both Brady and Gronkowski, as you see the incentives, and they're going to make those guys, like, play really, really well to get that money. I mean, part of it is... they're worried about like setting some sort of precedent where they give Brady and Gronk raises out of nowhere. It has nothing to do with an extension or anything else. And now all of a sudden they've got player X, Y, and Z saying, well, wait a second, you had me take less money too, and now I want a correction also.
All right, so do you think Gronkowski is satisfied? Do you think with these incentives that now he's happy? Because obviously he was very unhappy. Do you think this... is that he's walking away from this deal going, all right, this is great.
I mean, I don't think he's totally satisfied, no. But do I think it's going to affect his performance this year? Probably not, especially now that he's got all this money to play for.
Right.
So, I think that's part of it, too. If I'm Gronk, the biggest problem I have with this, what is all this tied to? Okay, he's got 70 catches, 1,085 yards, 9 touchdowns. Those are the triggers. 80% play time. And then he's got the 16 per game roster bonuses. What is that all tied to? All ties to his health.
Right.
Like he, and the reason he did the deal in the first place, as early as he did it, and it was a bad deal at the time. Like the reason he did the deal in the first place was because, like, I want to get my money now because I don't know how long I'm going to last because I've got all of this injury history in my past. And it's always been part of like who he like kind of like it's always been part of who he is the injuries. Like that's why he fell in the draft. That's why he did his deal early. It's been like a constant theme over the course of his career. And so like the Patriots pushed that button again. And if you're him, wouldn't you think to yourself, I'm trying to insure myself against injury. And now like the way this contract is set up,
it's completely based on me being healthy. Right. Right.
Like so like that part of it, if I'm Gronk, like, that part of it would probably grate on me, too. Like, that you're constantly saying, okay, like, but we're going to protect ourselves and we're going to make sure that, you know, I think the per-game roster bonus is, like, to me, like, Aaron Rodgers had him in his last deal. He got him taken out in this newest deal. Or, like, for a league that's, like, talking about player safety so much, and being like, we're really, really worried about the well-being of these guys.
Yeah, it's hypocritical to
putting per-game roster bonuses in, so if you're not healthy, you don't get your money.
Right.
Like, so if a guy needs 4 weeks to come back off a hamstring, say, But he knows.
Then you're going to rush yourself back. So you
of course
yeah.
you are. Right,
right, right.
Of course you are.
Right. So, yeah, and it seems like he's got to look at that 16-game thing and go, there's no way that's happening. Like, that's not going to happen for me.
Right. I mean, that part to me, like, if I'm him, I look at that and I say, like, I would have said, like, you know, you got to give me some protection here. So why don't we make it, like, why don't we make it the, like, say let's do a yardage average for the games I do play in or whatever, minimum 8 games. I average 80 yards, whatever it would be, you know, like do something like that creative that maybe would protect him against injury. And that's the one thing that they gave him the protection from injury when they did the deal early. So it protected Gronk a little bit back then. And ever since then, they've been protecting themselves against the injury.
Yeah, well, it seems like they got a couple guys that are going to be pretty pissed off this season. And again, it probably won't affect
them. And it might benefit them.
You think that will benefit them? You think Brady and Gronk being a little unsatisfied will benefit them?
I mean, like, the incentives are out there. And I think sometimes in these situations, I mean, look, there are people in management, I think, in a lot of places that would tell you, like, they wouldn't mind having an employee saying, like, I'm going to show you.
Oh, well, sure, yeah.
You know, so.
But I don't know if that's an attitude of a guy that's been in the league going into his 9th year. You know, that seems more of like a young player. A guy with that kind of off-the-field income and a guy that's been in the league for 9 years with that injury history, I don't know if he's thinking, I'm going to show you. Maybe the opposite of that, maybe he goes, I'm going to go protect myself. You know, if I'm supposed to go over the middle and I see that, you know, this is going to put me in some danger, I'm not doing it.
Right.
And what are you going to do about it? I mean, exactly. You know, like, I'm going to get 1,000 yards receiving. I'm going to get the 9 touchdown catches. I mean, that's going to happen. So there's the other way of looking at it is, screw you, I'm not getting myself hurt.
It's just it's a weird dynamic because it's like, you look at how different it, like, it's, look at how the Falcons handled Julio.
Right.
Right? Like, the Falcons handled Julio, they moved a little money up, and this is like a guy with 3 years left on his deal. And Julio's in the same situation. Julio's had injuries. Julio's like one of these guys who like can now see his football mortality. And he had 3 years left on his deal and he said, you know what? Like, screw it. I'm gonna try and get something now. And the Falcons moved some money up for him and then they promised to look at redoing his deal after this year, which will be where Gronk is now, with 2 years left on his contract.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers, 2 years left on his contract. The Packers do that for him. There's no – like, these guys all watch what's going on in other places. Gronk can watch Todd Gurley in L.A. These guys all watch what's happening in these other places. And I'm sure there's part of them that's like – and now they understand the dynamics of where they play, but it's still like, I mean, my God, what else do I have to do?
Right.
Like, those two, like it's just and the interesting thing about it, Fred, is that they've always been able to kind of handle players who are disgruntled because – it's, again, the whole, like, pointing to number 12 thing and saying, well, if he's on board, then, you know, nobody else has room to complain. The complicated thing about this over the last year for them has been it's never been actually number 12 himself.
Yeah. All right. Ben Bailey is going to join us. We will be back. Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What the hell is this? No one regular is on the show today. Everyone's on vacation. It's just me. Breer over here, Ben Bailey, works for MMQB. Are you aware of what that is?
I am not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have you. Monday morning quarterback.
Monday morning
quarterback. Are you a sports fan?
Kind of. Not a big sports fan.
Well, then you won't know who Breer is, so I won't explain his role any longer.
I have like one comment or two comments in a sports conversation before I'm out.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, why did I get into this? Now they think I know what I'm talking about.
Because you're a large individual. You're 6'6", right?
I used to be. I think I'm a little less than that now. Yeah. Gravity's bringing me down, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're not an old man. Don't say things like that.
Well, hey, I know how old I am.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing is that I don't think... How old are you?
I'm 47.
See, I'm 43. Don't start talking like that. You're in good shape. I'm in terrible shape. So if things are happening to you like that...
It's just the truth, man. It's not some perception I have of myself getting old. I'm not as tall as I used to be.
See, when someone who's in good shape that's that much older than me says things like that, I only wonder what's going to happen to me. I'll be dead.
You're in trouble, man. You're just going to be really short. You're not going to die. You're just going to be like 4 or 5 inches shorter.
See, I think if you're losing 5 inches, you're close to death. Yeah, I'm going to guess that that's
you're
not
probably
the
right about that.
I'm going to guess that's not the best thing that happens. Ben Bailey, you know him from his stand-up. You know him from Cash Cab, which they brought back.
Yeah, man.
It's every Friday on the Discovery Channel. He's playing the City Winery in Boston at 7 o'clock. Visit citywinery.com/Boston for tickets and details. Now, Ben, I knew you from Cash Cab. At first, I wasn't even aware that you were a comedian. And right. then I saw the roast of Patrice O'Neill. And I'm like, oh, here's this nice guy, and he's in a cab, and he asks questions, and it's... You know, and he's like very excited when people win. And then you murdered. And you did it at the Cellar, right?
At the No, it was at the old Boston Comedy Club, actually.
Oh, it was?
In New York.
Yeah, right. Okay, so it was
before it closed down.
So there's like Rich Voss and Norton, and Patrice is you know, was a huge ball buster. And then here comes Ben Bailey from Cash Cab and just destroys. If you've never seen it, it's on YouTube. It's everywhere.
It's so funny. Thanks, man. That. I never knew like what a big thing that would end up being. It kind of came around on you know on the internet, and everybody wants to talk to me about that.
Well, it's become like a classic set. I mean, it's
I put a lot into it. You know, I worked hard on that. I wrote for a while so I could. I kind of had to prove myself to all those guys.
Yeah, because that's something that obviously some people don't do, is they don't write for those things. And is there any? Okay, so you've been a comic for a long time.
Yeah.
Is there anything? Like, is bombing at a roast where there's a bunch of other comedians there worse than bombing in front of, like, a huge crowd?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. There's been a couple of roasts where someone just died a horrible death.
Yeah.
And never came back from it.
Really?
Yeah, like a career-ending roast
really?
Set. Yeah, yeah. Like, these are, like, roasts that we did. Like, that one, that was just something we did
well,
in New York.
It
wasn't televised or anything. But if you bomb at a roast, you're bombing in front of everyone in your business, you know, like... It hasn't gone well for some people.
You're probably offending people, too.
Yeah, you might be offending a few people.
Well, no, but
people have pretty thick skin these days. You can say almost anything on a roast.
Well, the more offensive it is if it's well-written.
But if it's not funny, like, then you're
I don't think that's the problem. Like, the only guy I know that completely bombed that was a comic, completely bombed, was Tommy Davidson, and they wouldn't even put him in the show.
Like, he just got cut out of it.
They just cut him out, which is bad. Like, when they have Martha Stewart doing stuff and then you get cut out of it, it's bad. So
Whose roast was that?
I don't know. It's one of the...
Martha Stewart killed, but Tommy Davidson was cut out.
It was like... And it was
She had mad roasting skills from her prison time.
That's right. She had to learn how to survive by her wit.
Sorry, Martha.
Is that a scene that you hung out in, or you're West Coast based, right? Or are you New
York
now?
No, I'm East Coast. Yeah, that was totally the scene that I hung out in. I was part of that group, you know.
Okay,
that's like my class, you know.
All right, so
the guys I came up with.
Rich and I are fairly close with Norton.
Oh, that's too bad.
But that group that you're with is just vicious, right? That group of guys.
Yeah, we were. I mean, we're old now. We're a little more mellow, but yeah, things used to be pretty rough at the old Comedy Cellar table, sitting there. You know, I remember some young guys came in. They were trying to like find their way in and tell us, "Oh, we're new comedians." You know, they brought their CDs with them, and Patrice just smashed them over the side of the table. Oh, I'll take those. They just go crack and smash on the table and handed it back to the kid in pieces.
Because there's like a back table at the Cellar, right? Where everyone kind of hangs out.
Yeah.
All the comedians hang out. And you have to kind of earn your way into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you used to. Now, I don't know.
All right. So well, back when.
But back then, back yeah. Back then, yeah. Take your lumps and you know, work your way in.
And so, especially when Patrice is alive, I imagine that you're. What was that like for you? How long did it take for you to ingratiate yourself and feel like. All right, I'm part of this. It's not all this. They're not everyone's attacking me.
Well, we were kind of... Well, I mean, everybody's under attack no matter what. But, like, we were kind of the guys who made that happen. You know, we were just so ruthless to each other, sitting around ripping on each other all night long, that's kind of where it came from, you know? That's why Colin Quinn was like, hey, we should do a show.
Yeah, Tough Crowd.
And then Tough Crowd came out of it, you know? So I was kind of in... I was a made man from the beginning a little bit, you know. But you still had to keep your chops up. You could be chased out on any night. Bill Burr came in one night talking about how he did a gig on a bus, and we just reamed him until he just turned around and left. And
went home. He just said, "You got me."
He's like, I'm leaving. He's still mad about it, I think.
I can't defend myself in this situation.
Yeah, it's been 15 years. I'm sure if I talked to him about it, he'd be upset.
And it's surprising because Burr can go off.
Oh, yeah.
So that had to be a great feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anybody was a victim. We all attacked Patrice one night for like 45 minutes, an hour. He's just sitting there, pretending to eat a falafel, sweating. We were taking turns dabbing his head while he was, because we were killing him. If everybody turns on you in that situation, there's pretty much nothing you can do. You're just going to sit there.
You got to sit there and just take it.
And take it until they stop coming up with funny things to say about you.
You got to think about it. You got to think happy thoughts. All right, so... So you're doing stand up and you're getting specials and stuff like that, and you're a newer comic and you're hanging out with these guys and you have that style, and then they come to you and they say, we have this idea for a television show, a game show, and a cab. How do you transition from busting on Patrice O'Neal for 45 minutes to getting in and being a nice fella in a cab, giving away prizes?
You know, it's a really interesting question that you ask, because they wanted me, the producers of Cash Cab initially wanted me to be mean, and they wanted me to, like, roast the people when they got the answers wrong. They said something stupid. They wanted me to kind of go after them, and it just didn't feel right. Like, I had fun with those guys, and it's fun to write nice, you know, good cutdowns and rip on your friends and keep each other sharp and keep your skin thick, which we need. But it's another thing to, like, throw some people unexpectedly onto a TV show and then be mean to them at the same time.
Right, like, sure. Like,
I'm like, we're kind of throwing a lot at these people already. By right. The time they're sitting there, me making fun of their hair is not going to help, or their shirt, you know, it's like...
Right, and they're just like, let me off here.
Yeah, like, just like, what are you guys doing to me? Just right. Let me out. It just didn't feel right. I was like, I don't want to do that. So there's enough people being mean to other people on TV. What if I just treat them really nicely? And they all these TV executives looked at each other like, what?
Like, how is he doing
this?
That's
crazy.
We didn't know Ben Bailey was capable of this kind of empathy. Like,
they didn't know that other side of me.
So they
from
just
those old days with those guys.
So it was just like something you auditioned for?
Yeah.
Okay, so just, and they hadn't checked out your resume? They were just like, here you go?
Well, it's funny. I did that roast of Patrice. I can't remember what year, but it was way before any of this stuff.
Right.
And it never really surfaced. These guys who produced it and taped it, they never did anything with it, you know. And then, you know, 20 years later, or it's got to be like 16 years ago or something that we did. I can't remember when it was, but a long time later, people started going, hey, you know, now if you, like, Google my name, Patrice's name comes up, and, like, it takes a second to get to where you can listen to or watch that roast. But that happened way after Cash Cab.
All right.
That became known, you know.
Okay, so have you did celebrity cash cabs, right?
Yeah, we did. Last summer we did, yeah.
Okay, who was on it?
Brooke Shields, Matthew Perry, Scott Bakula, Gilbert Godfrey, Jeff Garlin, Susie Essman.
Well, you had to bust Godfrey's balls, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just... That's
I could hardly get a word in on busting his balls because he was so busy busting mine, but yeah.
Okay.
He was hilarious. He was probably definitely the funniest one.
But yeah, he...
don't tell Garlin I said that.
Well, Garland's a different style. I think that if you put Godfrey in that kind of situation...
Yeah,
He can turn it up and then see how hot it's got to get in there. And
yeah,
then,
oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, so you're doing all this, and they're doing it. Was anyone like a huge pain in the ass?
No.
Okay.
Surprisingly, no. Everybody was cool.
Okay.
Matthew Perry, who's arguably the biggest star in the bunch, was like, yeah, no, this is fun, man. He was cool.
Did he seem like all right?
Yeah.
Very thin man now.
He didn't seem super thin.
All right.
Is he now? I mean, that was a year ago.
I mean, when was the last time I saw Fred Perry? When was the last time I saw tennis great Fred Perry? No,
I don't know when was that.
I zoomed his body and took a look around,
and you were like, "Wow, he's thin. He looks so thin. Like,
wow, he has no flesh on him. This is amazing."
He looked good, man. I thought he looked Healthy and well, Matthew Perry. And he was a good dude. He was doing a play in New York.
Okay.
At the time.
So things are taking off for him.
All right. Well, he had written it, so.
Oh.
I don't know if.
That's interesting.
A labor of love or what, but.
No, is that something you go, if you find out that, like, a television star is appearing in a play, you might go, that's cool. Like, I saw the dude from Breaking Bad at a play here where it was essentially, like, a five-hour monologue. He was playing Lyndon Johnson. Bryan Cranston, thanks. And if you see, like, okay, this guy from a TV show, it's a big hit. He's an iconic character. And then you go, he's in a play, and you go, ah, you know, maybe I'll see that play. And then you realize that he wrote it. Like, are you walking into that thing? I mean, that's like a day.
Me, personally, no.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Like, hey, the guy from Friends wrote a play. No.
Even if that said guy invited me to the play?
That would be like the worst if you knew him.
I probably wouldn't.
If like, you knew him. And
oh, whatever day that is, I don't think I can do it.
And he's like, Ben, I wrote this play. Like anybody. Except for Colin Quinn, which he had
to, Quinn, I would go to Quinn's play. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's great at that. But
hey, Ben, I wrote a play on a call.
Yeah, exactly.
Folks,
Quinn's legendary. I love that guy.
Yeah, that book he wrote about race. That race book was tremendous.
I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah,
it's something Colors. I have a terrible memory. It's something Colors. You got to read it. It's
I'll
great.
Check it out. I didn't know about it.
He talks about growing up in New York and like there's a chapter on every race.
Oh, that's like. Kind of off of his New York story. Special.
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What?
The coloring book.
The coloring book. Yeah, coloring that's what book. It was.
Nice.
All right, so they brought Cash Cab back because there was a demand for it.
There was. People were clamoring for it. They never stopped. We kept thinking, all right, they're going to give up. They're going to go. They're going to get tired. But it seemed to build. You know, people just kept saying, when is it coming back?
Yeah.
Not would you bring it back. When is it coming back? And right. Finally we were like, well, let's bring it back.
Yeah. And you're very good. But people have to realize that you're a stand-up first.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny. People, when Cash Cab was obviously like the biggest success of my career to this point. But it kind of derailed my stand-up career a little bit because it just sort of changed things.
Right.
You know? And I had all these people from... You know, Cash Cab fans coming to my stand-up shows and being like, wow.
Right, exactly.
You know, like you felt about the roast of Patrice. It's pretty different, you know. It's not...
Well, yeah, I'm not
I'm
only...
not being the nicest man on earth.
That's what I'm saying, is when I refer to your... I'm not only talking about the Patrice roast. I'm talking about... That was just murder. I mean, that was just great. But also your stand-up act, as it happens with a lot of people, like Saget, like, you know, people go to that and they're like, not that you're playing a... guy from Full House and Cash Cab, but you know, people go see Saget and they're like, Jesus, like, you know, I took my kids here because they're a fan of, like, you know, Full House.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the they expect him to be the character he is on TV,
right? And so, you know, you're a super nice guy in Cash Cab and all this stuff, and then they come out to the stand-up and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, but there's a crossover.
Yeah, I'm not filthy like Bob Saget.
No one is.
But it's definitely different from Cash Cab.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes
they
expect me to be asking trivia questions and giving money away at comedy clubs.
Well, those are genius people.
Well, so that's the thing, is Cash Cab brings people out to see me, but a fair amount of them are people who haven't been to a comedy show before.
Okay.
You know, so it gets them out, but they don't know exactly what they're getting into.
So they assume it's like bingo. I understand.
Yeah.
All right, Ben Bailey, it's a pleasure meeting you, sir.
You too. Thanks, man.
Tonight at the City Winery at 7 p.m.
Yeah, they have to tape Cash Cab, record Cash Cab so they can come to my show.
That's right.
They can't do both.
Cash Cab is on every Friday, including tonight on the Discovery Channel. If you want to get tickets, visit citywinery.com/Boston. That's citywinery.com/Boston. For tickets and details, I suggest strongly that you go see the show tonight. Ben, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Have a great weekend, guys.